Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hey, amigos. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Hey, amigo. Welcome to the Season 9 premiere, my friend. Being a special night and all, I invited two of my pals to join the party. I hope y'all don't mind. Paul J. McSorley and Jeff Sturdivant. Oh, it's kind of like a make-believe party, Chester. Like, Jeff records this part, Paul records that part, and then they send them to me and I'm not a charlatan, Chester. It's theater of the mind, man. Anyway, come on in, friend. Marsupials have no imagination. Hey, check out simplyscarypodcast.com, will you? For as little as $7.99 a month, you'll get the entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. And there's a little patron button on the top there. You can't miss it. So get clicking. Go on now. Get. Not really. Stay. You're going to miss a hell of a show. So tonight, we welcome back our good pal, P.D. Williams. I don't know if welcome back is the right term for it, actually. He kind of started sleeping on the couch for a while, and now he basically lives here. But he is fairly neat and tidy, and he always puts his bottles in the recycling bin. Plus, he writes great stories. So without further delay, from author P.D. Williams, I give you... Quick, hide the body.
Hi, Jack. What's up?
I need help with something.
Cole rolled his eyes. Sure, he loved his dopey friend, but with Jack, it was always something. Getting kicked out of his apartment after blowing his rent money in Vegas. Letting his car run out of gas on the freeway at rush hour. Always something. His friendship with Jack and their cohort Andy was like a relationship between two disappointed parents and a problem child. The problem child being Jack. The beleaguered friends long accepted that Jack's loose screw had fallen out and rolled somewhere under the refrigerator.
What is it this time, Jack? Did Sky wise up and kick you to the curb? Did they repossess your car? Again? Please, be original and surprise me.
I killed someone.
Well, now, that is surprising. What the heck happened?
Well,
Jack muttered,
it's kind of a funny story.
Jack was enduring another boring night at the laundromat. To pass the time, he checked the bulletin board for interesting postings. However, all he found were the usual ads. Strangers wanting to unload old cars, worried pet owners, and oboe teachers pleading for students. Any students. An ad stapled at the bottom of the corkboard caught his attention. A pink flyer advertising the mystical abilities of a palm reader named Lady Zusa. Hello? This is interesting, Jack mused. He tore off one of the narrow strips across the bottom that included the mystic's phone number, then tucked it inside his pocket for future reference. From the tedium at the laundromat, Jack returned to his tattoo apartment. He went straight to his unkempt bedroom, dumped the unfolded clothes on a chair, and forgot about them. Later, when the clothes dwindled and began to draw bugs, he'd toss them back in the basket and repeat the arduous process. The effort from having done the laundry left Jack tired and thirsty. He went to the fridge and looked inside. Nestled next to an old jar of mustard, a slice of pizza from the Obama years, and two black bananas was the object of his affection, a six-pack of beer. Jack felt like his whole body was smiling.
Come to Pappy, tall boys!
Happy Jack popped the top on one of the beers and retired to the living room. He set the drink on the coffee table, sans coaster, and emptied his pockets. As he rummaged through one of them, his fingers grazed a slip of paper from earlier. He held it up and looked it over. That's when the whim hit him. The stupid, terrible whim. He dialed the number and prepared to be amazed.
Yes?
Asked a feminine voice on the other end.
Lady Zusa? Jack inquired.
I am she. How may I help you?
The voice intrigued Jack. Its cryptic beauty matched the enigmatic woman.
I came across your flyer at the laundromat. Very impressive ad campaign you put out there, by the way. I was thinking it might be fun to stop by and have you read my palm. You know, for goofs and giggles.
I can assure you, sir, I do not perform my craft for goofs and giggles. I only see clients who are appreciative of my well-honed craft. Serious people who desire to...
I'll pay you $50.
How does Saturday at 6:30 work?
I'll be there with bells on, unless you think they'd be a distraction.
I appreciate your humor, mister.
As I do with other women that I book for special private services, I prefer to remain anonymous.
As you wish. I look forward to our time together.
Careful there. That's what Cinnamon and her associate Sapphire said until they got to know me.
Until Saturday,
Lady Zusa said before hanging up. Jack replaced the phone with the TV remote on the coffee table.
Time for some hot action on the tube.
Jack fired up the TV and skipped to a classic TV channel. He kicked back, relaxed, and binge-watched reruns of Murder, She Wrote.
I would totally do Angela Lansbury, he said, grinning.
On Saturday, Jack showed up early for his 6:30 appointment with Lady Zusa. Being high-strung and impatient, he always showed up early for things. The foreboding house looked like a prop from a classic horror film. Its features included a weathered roof sagging under its own weight, curls of paint shaved away by sun and time, and smudged windows dirtied by neglect. A small sign at the end of the brick walkway showed the house was the property of Lady Zusa, palm reader. As Jack stood looking at the dreary dwelling, an ominous feeling came over him, something he attributed to a vivid imagination. Pushing aside his unease, he continued to the front door. Bing bong, the doorbell sang. Jack listened as the footfalls inside drew closer. The door opened, revealing a middle-aged woman in a colorful muumuu. With a matching turban perched on her mane of wild hair and gaudy theatrical jewelry, she looked like a caricature of a soothsayer straight out of central casting. The only thing missing was a crystal ball and a black cat with a bad attitude.
You must be Jack,
Lady Zusa cooed.
Please enter.
Jack followed Lady Zusa down a short hall and into a shadowy drawing room. Dim overhead lighting bathed the space in haunting hues, creating an aura of grimness. The antique furniture exuded an old-world charm, something that is gone but not forgotten. Jack's nose crinkled at the musty odor saturating the air. It smelled like damp clothing that had gone ignored for too long, a nauseating aroma he knew well. Creepy oil paintings of brooding individuals hung on flowery wallpaper, their stern gazes boring into Jack's soul. His interest then shifted to a large curio cabinet that housed intriguing items such as stone figurines of mythical beasts, ceremonial daggers, and other odds and ends. Along the upper walls, busts of angels and demons perched on narrow shelves like sentinels. The spookish atmosphere put Jack on edge, so to brighten the mood, he went for an icebreaker.
I love your place. The decor is interesting. Early American flea market, if I'm not mistaken. It makes quite a statement. That statement being, run for your life.
Jack's smarmy critique annoyed Lady Zusa.
Just take a seat already,
she said, pointing to a small round table in the center of the room. Atop it rested a single red candle waiting for a flame to give it life. Two velvet wing chairs sat opposite one another. Jack did as Lady Zusa had told him and waited for her to join him. After taking her place across from Jack, Lady Zusa lit the crimson candle, then leaned back and closed her eyes. She hummed and swayed, as if summoning a spiritual guide from a phantom dimension. Suddenly she halted and sat up straight, surprising Jack. She opened her eyes and began speaking in hushed tones.
I shall now read the part of your palm that will allow me to search your mind for your deepest fears and your darkest secrets.
The statement alarmed Jack.
Look, I only have a casual fancy for Angela Lansbury, so if you get any images of her, me, and a Shetland pony, don't read too much into it. I don't like being judged.
Be silent and show me your palm,
Lady Zusa instructed. Jack licked his dry lips and reluctantly offered his hand. Lady Zusa reassured Jack.
Because of your misgivings, we will instead explore misfortune and opportunity.
She turned Jack's hand over, then leaned forward for a closer look. She frowned as she traced her finger along a line in his palm.
Oh, this is not good.
What? What's not good?
You will find yourself standing before death. The unfortunate event would be of your own making.
Jack was stunned.
Are you yanking my crank? How? Where? When? That's not going to be one of those over-the-top Final Destination deaths, is it? I don't want to get sucked down the turlet while dropping snicker bombs.
Allow me to take a closer look.
Lady Zusa studied Jack's palm again. She gasped, then sprang from her chair.
You are going to murder someone. You are going to murder me.
Jack leaped from his seat and backed away from the table.
Well, what are you talking about, lady? I've never hurt a soul. I'm a good person.
A murderer is what you are. I'm calling the police.
Lady Zusa trotted across the room to a buffet where an old rotary phone sat. The receiver shook in her quaking hand as she dialed a number.
Wait, stop! Jack yelled. I haven't done anything.
A faint voice drifted from the phone.
911, what's your emergency?
Before Lady Zusa could answer, Jack sprinted to her, yanked the receiver from her grip, and slammed it back into the cradle. His body quivered with nerves. Cold sweat drenched him. He was not expecting so much drama.
What are you doing? You're just a charlatan who takes people's money in exchange for entertainment. Do you honestly think the authorities are going to take you seriously?
Lady Zusa's heated stare burned into Jack.
We'll see about that.
Again, she reached for the phone. A flash of terror shot through Jack's body, leaving him panicked. Without thinking, he grabbed Lady Zusa by her shoulders and shoved her away from the buffet. He didn't realize how hard he had pushed her until she stumbled backwards, hitting the wall with great force and sinking to the floor. Jack was relieved when she sat up.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, don't worry about me,
Lady Zusa snarled.
You will do well to worry about your own.
A shelf above Lady Zusa collapsed, sending one of the heavy busts crashing to her head with a loud thunk. The sight left Jack horror-struck.
My God! Are you all right?
Lady Zeusa shook her head as if she were reassembling the pieces of her brain jarred loose by the bust. She chortled.
It's going to take more than a blow to the head to render me impotent.
Grabbing the edge of the curio cabinet beside her, she pulled herself up. She swayed groggily to the front of the cabinet, using it for support, causing it to wobble. Jack gasped.
Lady Zeusa, you're in danger!
Despite the warning, Lady Zeusa threw her head back and set loose a sinister guffaw.
You fool are the one who...
The heavy piece of furniture toppled over, flattening the wicked mystic with a sickening crunch. Jack felt mortified.
Oh no! What have I done?
Seeped a muffled groan from under the wreckage. Jack became a statue.
Lady Zeusa? Is that you?
A slurred whisper emerged from the shards of glass and shattered wood.
No, mere furniture can curtail the dark powers of...
The ceiling crackled and bulged. Unexpectedly, a piano crashed through it, landed on top of the existing heap. After a moment of wide-eyed silence, Jack decided he had caused enough trouble and prepared to leave. A chandelier attached to the upstairs bedroom ceiling loosened and fell, blocking his path. A chunk of roofing adorned with a television antenna soon followed. The continuous melee left Jack desensitized to the violent pattern of unfortunate events. With a slackened face and empty conscience, he muttered,
"Wait for it! Wait for it!"
As if on cue, a sparrow flitted down from the hole in the ceiling and perched on top of the antenna. The floor, groaning under the weight of the rubble, finally gave way, sending it crashing into the inky blackness of the cellar. Nonplussed, Jack walked around the immense crater in the floor and went to the front door. He placed his hand on the doorknob, gave it a twist, then stopped. Images of police cruisers, reporters, paramedics, and furniture movers paraded through his racing mind. That's when he knew it was time to call the cavalry.
I don't know what to do,
Jack huffed.
You've got to call Andy and get over here. Between the three of us, we can figure a way out of this. We may have to, you know, dispose of the body.
Cole had doubts as to the veracity of Jack's outlandish claim.
Before I do that, are you messing with me?
Have I ever lied to you before about screwing up?
Jack had made a good point. He had a way of being in the wrong place at the wrong time for the wrong reasons.
Are you certain you stopped her before she completed the 911 call?
Cole asked. The only thing Jack was certain about was his uncertainty.
Yes, no, I don't know.
Just try and stay calm,
said Cole.
Don't do anything until we get there. Is your car out front?
Yes, I parked near... Oh, no. What if one of the neighbors saw me coming in?
Okay, listen to me. It's going to be dark soon. Wait until then and move the car a few blocks away. After you've done that, take any back way you know of to return to the house. Break in through the back door or a window if you have to. In the meantime, text me the address. I'll try to get in touch with Andy. I can't promise he'll be able to sneak out and help us. That dog-ass ugly girlfriend he let move in is pretty domineering. She might not let him out. Now then, am I going to need to pick up any items? Lye, bleach, a hacksaw?
Jack's heart laid down a percussive jungle groove.
Lye? Bleach? Oh my God! What are you thinking about? Are you some kind of lunatic?
I prefer high-functioning sociopath. Look, I won't have a true plan until I get there and assess the situation. Just sit tight and for pity's sake, don't touch anything.
Yeah. Sit tight. Got it.
Good. See you soon.
Cole ended the call, laid the phone down, and thought, and he calls me a lunatic?
That better not be one of your loser friends calling.
Mona shouted at Andy. Andy looked at his screen and shuddered. It was his friend Cole calling. Not good. He needed an excuse to answer.
Don't worry, Buttercup. It's probably just my supervisor calling to check on a report I have to present on Friday.
You're a greeter at Applebee's, for heaven's sake. What kind of report are you talking about? An in-depth analysis of burger sliders versus jalapeno poppers?
Andy devised another reason to take the call.
Actually, it's my mom calling about Grandma. She's really worried. The doctors say Grandma's hanging on by a thread.
Mona showed no sympathy.
Should she be doing that in her condition?
Andy let the sarcasm pass.
Sorry, Shug, but I really need to take this. I promise it won't be long.
Mona crossed her arms across her gnat-bite breasts and scowled.
See that it doesn't.
Yes, Mona.
Andy said sheepishly before going into the bedroom and closing the door. He slid his thumb over the screen and held the phone close to his ear.
Hey, Cole.
He whispered.
I thought I told you it's not a good idea to call me at home. You know how possessive Mona is. She's very territorial.
So's a dog whenever you try to take away his humping pillow,
Cole said.
Look, Jack's in trouble again. He needs us.
Andy winced. Jack's knack for goofing up was matched only by the stress he caused whenever he sucked Andy and Cole into another whirlwind of stupidity.
What is it this time? Go ahead, surprise me.
He killed someone.
That is surprising.
That's what I said. He's at a palm reader's house. During his reading, she accused him of being a murderer and even went so far as to call 911. Before she could talk to them, Jack panicked, gave her a little shove, and everything went to hell in an Easter basket. This fell, that tipped over. Now she's a flapjack. He's scared that he's going to be accused of causing her death. Obviously, he can't call the cops.
Why not? It sounds like one big accident. I'm sure he could put a positive spin on it somehow. Besides, you said she didn't get a chance to report him before things went sideways.
Doesn't matter. Even though she didn't talk to the dispatcher, there'll still be a record of the call being made. They can likely trace it back to the house. We've got no choice. We've got to save Jack's butt again. I told him we'd go over and figure out what to do about the body.
Andy thought.
Hey, Andy, you there?
You know this'll make us accessories to murder, don't you?
We won't be accessories to murder because there is no murder. So you in or not?
Andy sighed, rubbing his temples.
Okay. But this is going to be the last time I'm going to bail that idiot out. The problem is going to be sneaking out of here. Mona's the suspicious type.
I know you'll think of something. You're smarter than the average bear.
Then how come I'm always getting pulled into these idiotic situations?
Because you can't live without us. I love you, man.
Yeah, well, I love you too.
No, you don't understand. I really love you. I stole one of your shirts. When I'm sad, I sniff it. Then suddenly I'm lighter than air. You, my friend, are the wind beneath my wings.
Easy there, Sam Smith. What would Angela Lansbury say?
That's Jack's sick fantasy. Mine's Anna Kendrick. Honestly, man, I'd eat ice cream out of her butt crack.
And on that note, give me the address.
I'll text it to you.
No, don't do that. Mona's already pissed I'm on the phone. She might check my calls. She does that sort of thing regularly. It's like she's a prison guard tossing a cell for contraband. Tell me the address and I'll scribble it down.
All right, tell me when you're ready.
Andy searched the room before settling on the dog-shaming calendar on Mona's nightstand. He removed the pen from his shirt pocket, tore off the top leaf, turned it over, and used the calendar to write on.
Okay, shoot.
Cole gave him the address, told him to park a few blocks away, and then hung up. Now all that Andy had to figure out was how to get past the pillow-humping dog in the next room.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Nightfall had come. Cole was hiding behind a tree in Lady Zeus's front yard waiting for Andy. He was about to give up hope that Andy would make it when he felt a hand from behind him touch his shoulder. Startled, he yelped and spun around.
Jeez, dude, relax. It's just me.
Andy whispered. Cole panted like an overheated dog.
Are you trying to give me a heart attack? We don't need another dead person to worry about.
Sorry, buddy. I didn't want to be seen, so I went up a back alley.
Cole's attire, a black shirt, black pants, and a black wool cap, earned a double take from Andy.
Why you dressed like a cat burglar? You have a diamond heist planned for later?
Cole looked at Andy's Applebee's uniform.
And what's that you've got on? Are you going to tell the corpse the soup of the day?
I'll have you know these clothes were my ticket out of the apartment. I told Mona I forgot about having to fill in for a no-show. I think she bought it.
Good. So what's our play?
I saw an open door around the back. I guess Jack left it open for us.
Let's go then.
Cole followed Andy around the house and up the steps to the small porch. He nudged the door open. Then he and Andy stepped inside. They found themselves in a kitchen frozen in the past. The appliances looked like holdovers from the Depression era. A mountain of dirty dishes rose from a farm-style sink. The linoleum was curling at the edges, its once glossy green the color of drab olives.
Shall we?
He's your retarded chimp. You lead the way.
The two passed from the kitchen into a dining room. It was a sad place, with only a single chair tucked under a chipped wooden table. The setting exuded a loneliness that only an eccentric hermit could understand.
He could be anywhere,
Cole said. Andy cupped his hands to his mouth.
Hey, Jack! Where you be at, boy?
In here! Come to the front of the house,
came the reply. When Andy and Cole arrived at the doorway to the drawing room, Jack yelled,
Stop! Look out for the gigantic hole in the floor!
Yeesh,
Cole said.
You weren't kidding about the carnage.
I think the rest of the surface is fine to walk on. Just take your time and listen for cracking.
You got it.
After some careful maneuvering, Cole and Andy joined Jack at the edge of the abyss. Andy took out his phone, shook on its flashlight, and guided it around the dark space beneath them. The beam stopped on the pile of debris.
Would you look at that? I've never seen anyone die so sequentially. You say she survived some of the stuff falling on her?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. With her abilities to see into the future, you gotta wonder how she didn't see any of this coming down the pike.
Say, about that. Are you absolutely sure she is, in fact, dead?
A high whistling sound carried through the sky, its volume increasing as it drew closer. Suddenly, a space satellite the size of a washing machine fell through the ceiling and into the pit, creating a boom that made the house shake. Jack surveyed the added damage.
As a degenerate gambler, I'm going to put my money on yes.
This has gotten way out of hand,
Andy said.
Let's take a drive, call the authorities, and let them deal with this mess.
Jack's frustration showed.
I told you I may have been seen earlier, Plus, she's already called 911.
So what? Shouldn't they be here by now?
Andy asked.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, they haven't showed up yet. If they eventually do, they're gonna wonder how she made the call from under a ton's worth of crappy luck. They'll suspect foul play and start looking for a suspect.
Andy stroked his chin.
Yes, I see your dilemma. Anyone got an idea?
Jack offered a suggestion.
But what if we climb down there, move the rubble away, and hide the body? That way, no matter what anybody saw or what the 911 dispatcher thought, there's nothing to see here. No body, no problem.
Cole was dubious.
What do you think?
He asked Andy.
How will we get rid of her?
Jack offered another suggestion.
I know this sounds gruesome, but what if we place her in the bathtub and one of us dismembers her?
Cole grimaced at the thought.
And who, pray tell, is going to do that grisly act?
You brought it up first, Jack reminded him.
For pity's sake, I was only kidding you, half-wit.
All right, you were joking. But if one of us does the deed, who's it going to be?
Cole and Andy searched the other's eyes for a moment, then turned and looked at Jack. Jack's eyes became sewer covers.
Oh, no, not me, guys. I'm no butcher.
But it was your idea,
Andy said. Jack pushed back.
Yeah, well, none of that matters if we don't get down there and dig her out.
Cole knelt and scanned the blackness below with his own light.
How are we supposed to get down there? I don't see a way in. There's bound to be a basement door wherever that is.
I know a quicker way,
Andy said, before shoving Jack off the edge of the floor and into the basement. The top of the refuse brought an abrupt halt to Jack's screeching.
You motherfucker!
He soon collected himself, then scurried off the pile and onto the cracked concrete floor.
What the hell was that all about?
He shouted, brushing dust off himself.
Quit your belly aching and tell us if there's a door that's accessible.
Give me a minute,
Jack said. He removed his phone and guided its ray around the dim room. Soon, he found a door.
Eureka! I found it! I'll go up and open it. Then I'll come and get you guys. Hang tight.
Andy pulled Cole aside.
Look, I adore Jack, but I have a bad feeling about this. Maybe we ought to run while we have the chance.
Cole shot Andy a sour look.
How can you even think that? Sure, Jack's a moron, but he's our moron. Who was there back in 10th grade when Peter the Prick was giving you swirlies in the locker room toilets?
Andy's chin sank with the weight of shame.
Jack, I guess,
he mumbled.
And how about that time he convinced your mother that you fell on that roll of nickels? As I recall, it took the ER doctors an hour to fish $25 worth of embarrassment out of your bunghole. You must have looked like a human Pez dispenser.
Okay. We're in this together. But we better come up with a stronger idea than cutting that palm reader up like a tree on a power line.
Jack burst into the room.
The basement door's in the hall around the corner. Follow me.
It was a brief trip to the entrance to the basement. Cole reached inside and groped for a light switch. Once he made contact, he flicked it up, and an incandescent glow illuminated the lower area. They took care not to tumble as they descended the rickety steps. The stone walls emitted a dankness that coated the crowded space in a moist mist, taking their breath away. At the bottom, they stood mute, sizing up the Herculean task before them, namely, body recovery. Cole circled the horrid heap, thinking through plausible scenarios. Finally, an idea struck him.
It's too risky to climb up there. The whole thing could shift on us. Look around for some rope or chain that we can use to lasso the stuff on top. Once we pull enough of it off, it'll be easier and safer to dig the old girl out. Agreed?
Andy and Jack nodded.
Okay then,
Cole said.
Get to looking.
The team split up and began searching for the items they needed.
pushing aside stringy strands of cobwebs, they opened drawers and sagging boxes. As they traversed the chilly cellar, the crunching of debris under their shoes bounced around the gloomy area like skittering insects. Jack felt the need to fill the quiet with a random discussion.
So, Andy, how are things going with you and Mona?
Andy exhaled.
I don't know, man. I think I may have messed up by letting her move in. She's taken over everything, including my life. She brings a lot of tension, you know?
Maybe you could try to woo her into submission.
Like how?
Why don't you have a weekly date night? You could take her to a movie, go clubbing, dine at a swanky restaurant. Hey, that last one would show her that you can be a caring and classy guy for sure.
I don't know about that,
Andy said as he kicked some rubble out of the way.
Right after we started dating, I took her to one of those upscale eating establishments.
Oh yeah? Which one?
That fancy French place, La Chambre Royale.
Woo-wee! You are one refined gentleman.
Mona, unfortunately, isn't as refined. So we're halfway into the Blanquette de Veau when she farts so hard, so loud, and for so long that the chandeliers start swinging. The other diners thought it was an earthquake and dived under their tables for protection. I overheard a sobbing waiter call his mom and tell her that he loved her.
Cole interrupted the conversation.
Hey guys, I found about 15 feet of rope.
Come on, let's check it out,
Jack said, thankful for a reason to end his awkward conversation with Andy. Cole proceeded to make a hangman's noose with the rope.
So, who wants to try first?
Give it to me, I'll do it,
Jack said. He took the rope, widened the noose, and backed up a couple of feet. He spun the rope and tossed it at the antenna, snagging it on the first try. He tugged and the small section of roof toppled to the ground.
Yippee-ki-yay-ki-yo!
Nice wrangling there, Tex,
Cole said in a hokey cowboy accent.
Try to rope another one.
It took a few attempts, but the rope found its way around the leg of the busted piano. Jack ripped the piece away with a firm yank, then methodically took the rest of the broken instrument apart.
Okay, that should do it. Let's dig Pancake Patty out from under there.
Item by item, piece by piece, the team dug their way down to the remains of the splintered curio cabinet. Cole took charge again.
Let's gather on the other side of this beast. When I give the word, we'll lift it.
Jack turned pale.
Before we do, let's prepare ourselves for what we're going to find underneath.
Cole cringed.
Ugh, I hate this job. All right then, boys, grab an edge and get ready.
Once everyone had a firm grip, Cole counted down.
On three. One, two, three.
Grunting with effort, they lifted the heavy case and flung it backwards, creating a thick cloud of dust. The trio coughed as they fanned the fog away. Once it dissipated, a startling sight awaited them.
Where's the body?
Andy asked.
You said there'd be a human tostito under here.
Confused, Jack gave his best and only explanation.
Check the cabinet. Maybe she stuck to it.
Cole used his phone light to better inspect the cabinet.
There's nothing here, Jack. Are you positive she was under all of that?
I'm sure of it. I watched the cabinet fall on top of her, then the piano, then the chandelier, then...
We get it.
Andy interjected.
She was flattened by an oversized game of Jenga.
A chilling cackle drifted from the room above, terrifying the men.
Did you guys hear that?
Jack stammered.
Sounds like someone laughing.
Nah, it was more like a giggle than a laugh.
No, it was definitely a laugh.
I'd say it was a snicker.
Clearly, you're both hard of hearing. I know a giggle when I hear one.
Fine,
Jack said tersely.
Let's do rock, paper, scissors.
Cole refocused everyone.
We're wasting time. One of us needs to go up there and find who's making that noise.
Jack waved Cole off.
Nope.
No way I'm going up there by myself.
Well, it sure isn't going to be me.
Then we'll go together.
They were halfway down the hallway when another sinister cackle echoed through the creepy house, stopping Cole in his tracks. Andy collided with Cole, nearly knocking him down. Cole tensed with annoyance.
Will you back off? This isn't a bus station glory hole.
Sorry,
Andy said. Cole recentered.
I can't tell which direction the sound is coming from. It's everywhere, like a constant and inescapable presence that can never be avoided.
Yep, kind of like Jenna Ortega and Pedro Pascal,
Jack observed.
I say we split up,
Andy said.
Who wants to check this level?
I guess I can do that, Jack offered.
Since there's likely more rooms upstairs, Andy and I will search there.
It's a plan, then.
As the other two ascended the stairs, Jack continued down the narrow hallway, stopping every few feet to listen. Hearing nothing, he stepped inside a living room, turning on a light switch. Like the rest of the house, the furnishings were dusty and dated. He traversed the room, looking for anything that might have created the unsettling sound. An air vent, perhaps. From the corner of his eye, he noticed his shadow against the faded wallpaper. He turned away and went to inspect the closet, unaware that what he had seen was the ghostly shadow of Lady Zusa following his every footstep. Jack was about to open the closet door when a cold breeze blew through the room, sprinkling his skin with goosebumps. He sensed someone watching him. Summoning his courage, he spun around, but saw nothing unusual. Still, dread filled him.
I'm going upstairs.
After inspecting another bedroom that looked like an antique store, Cole decided that he and Andy should split up.
This will go a lot faster if you go one way and I go the other. I'll take the room down on the right. You search the one at the other end of the hall.
Although he wasn't happy about being on his own, Andy went on his way. His assigned room turned out to be a bathroom. As characters often do in scary movies, Andy inched toward a rusty clawfoot bathtub, grabbed hold of the shower curtain, and yanked it back. He was relieved to find it empty.
Whew! That was intense.
Satisfied that the room was clear of ghouls, Andy went to the doorway and leaned into the hall.
Hey, Cole, there's nothing down here.
Make sure you check everywhere, like under the sink and any closet that's in there.
Cole bellowed back.
Aye, aye, Captain. Always have to be in charge, don't you? Not dumb, you tyrant.
Andy mumbled. To calm himself, Andy went to the sink and turned on the cold water. He bent, scooped some water, and splashed it on his face. It was helping. He looked at himself in the mirror.
Calm down, Andy boy. Got a job to do.
He bent again for another scoop of healing water.
Ah, yeah.
He muttered.
That's better.
Straightening up, he became tangled in terror at the reflection of a woman in a turban glaring back at him. Words escaped Andy, as did screams. He backed away from the sink until he tripped over the edge of the tub, falling into it. He watched in horror as the specter began crawling from the mirror.
Oh, fuck!
Her contorting body cracking as she squeezed through the compact frame.
Oh, shit!
Andy broke free of his paralysis, sprang from the tub, and bolted from the bathroom, screaming like a hungry baby. Cole was leaving the bedroom when he heard Andy's cries. He turned and saw Andy barreling toward him, his ghost-white face twisted into a screaming mask of unbridled horror. Jack, now halfway up the staircase, heard the shrieking, then ran up the remaining steps at full speed. Just as he made it to the top, he and Jack met with a violent collision, sending them through a wall. Cole trotted to the bedroom that the wall belonged to. The crash left Jack sprawled on top of Andy, both groaning and unable to stand.
Stay as you are, guys. don't move,
Cole said. Andy and Jack did not intend to get up anytime soon. They were happy that Cole had come to help them.
Cole, thank God,
Andy croaked.
I told you not to move. Stay exactly as you are,
Cole instructed. He pulled his phone from his pocket, aimed it at Andy and Jack, and took a few snapshots.
What are you doing?
Jack asked.
Are you kidding me? I'm posting you two on Tinder under People Looking for a Gay Threesome.
Cole!
Andy wailed.
This isn't the time for your twisted humor. Get this idiot off of me before he becomes aroused.
Jack resented the implication.
I'm not gay, but if I was, I could do a whole lot better than you and your chubby little ass face.
Shut up, Jack. Something scared the crap out of Andy, and I'd like to know what it was.
Once he was free of Jack, Andy stood and allowed his full breath to return.
You guys aren't going to believe this, but there was this woman with a turban scowling at me from inside the bathroom mirror. I nearly wet myself when she started crawling out of it. You should have seen the way she was cramming herself through the tiny opening. It was like watching Mama June trying to fit in an elevator. It was awful, I tell you. Just awful.
That was Lady Zusa you saw,
Jack said.
I didn't see her downstairs like you did, but there was definitely something stalking me.
I've seen and heard enough. Let's get out of here and hope that nothing comes of this,
Cole said.
You mean like the body showing up back in the basement?
Andy asked.
That's a good point. Let's try to remember anything we may have touched and wipe it down thoroughly. Then we'll sneak out the way we came in and meet at Brawley's bar.
I like that idea, said Jack.
Get busy then.
After cleaning up after themselves, the group headed to the kitchen at the back of the house.
All we should have left to do is wipe off the doorknob on our way out,
Cole said.
I can't wait to get out of this spook house.
Me neither,
Andy added. He turned the doorknob, only to find it locked.
Why'd you lock the door while you were down here?
He asked Jack.
It's not like she was expecting a package from Amazon.
He tried the knob again, but still had no luck.
It's hopeless. This thing won't open.
Cole pushed Andy aside.
Jeez, Andy. You're such a weakling. Here, let me try it.
The stubborn door still refused to open.
No big deal. We'll go out through the front door instead. Just be careful not to be seen.
The group traveled to the front of the house via the dining room and hallway.
Give it a go,
Cole told Jack.
You're the strongest of us.
Yeah, but he's also the stupidest. You might need to tell him how to work the doorknob.
Jack bristled at the insult.
At least I'm not so fat that pharmaceutical reps follow me around suggesting I try Ozempic.
Girls, girls, please don't fight. Both of you are pretty,
Cole said, putting the plug into put-downs. Then turning to Jack, he said,
You're up, Samson.
Jack twisted the knob with all his might, but this attempt too failed with a whimper.
Sorry, guys, but she won't budge.
Andy trembled.
It's her. She's never gonna let us leave. This must be what it feels like to go to Tom Cruise's church. Oh, man. What are we gonna do?
Remain calm,
said Cole.
This is an old house. Maybe the humidity from the night air caused the wood to expand. We can still try the windows.
Let's start with the ones in the living room,
suggested Andy.
There's less chance of us being spotted on the side of the house.
To the living room,
Cole bellowed, leading the charge. As soon as Jack entered, he went straight to the window. His back muscles strained as he attempted to breach the uncooperative opening.
It's not budging an inch. Quick, somebody give me that chair in front of the TV.
Cole handed the cushioned chair to Jack and stood back.
Stand back, ladies, and let a man do his job.
The stuffed chair was light enough for him to lift over his head. With a loud grunt, he hurled it with full force against the waiting panes. Instead of the expected results, the chair bounced off the resisting windows like a spiked volleyball, hitting Jack in the chest.
The two rolled backward, end over end, until the chair returned to its upright position in front of the TV. Jack, pale and panting, was sitting in it, a sight that amused Cole.
"Would you like a snack from the kitchen?"
he asked Jack.
"I can't believe this,"
Andy moaned.
"We're trapped inside this place. How's that even possible?" "You know what? I don't even care if we get into trouble over this."
Pulling his phone from his pocket, he said,
"I'm calling the authorities and telling them to come and get us."
Suddenly, the living room door slammed shut. Cole ran to the door and attempted to pry it open, but to no avail. He turned to the others, both of whom were as fearful as he.
"I'm out of ideas, guys. I don't know what's going to happen to us, but I fear it's going to involve an evil, angry woman with bad intentions."
Cole was correct in his assessment of their dire predicament. However, he was mistaken about whom the angry, evil woman with bad intentions was going to be. Mona had been stewing for hours. She had called Applebee's earlier and learned that Andy had lied about working an extra shift. Midnight was closing in and she hadn't heard a peep from him.
"This is totally unacceptable,"
she yelled to no one. Mona considered her options.
"He's got to be off with his stupid drinking buddies, but where? Think, Daddy's bad girl, think."
She beamed as an idea came to her. She recalled noticing the escapee clutching what looked to be a slip of paper, perhaps a calendar leaf. With Sherlock Holmesian skill, Mona jogged to the bedroom and checked the dog calendar. Just as she had deduced, a page was missing.
"Aha,"
she said, smirking. Mona examined the calendar, hoping to find a clue. Soon she found it.
"There you are,"
she mewed. Daddy's bag girl opened the nightstand's drawer and fumbled for a pencil. When she found one, she rubbed the edge of the lead over the indentation left on the calendar from the previous scribbling. Her dark eyes narrowed as she read the exposed address.
"Time for little man to learn a lesson from the teacher."
Mona snagged her car keys and left the apartment. In the parking lot, she crawled behind the steering wheel of her cherry red Mini Cooper and fired up its motor. With the blood-curdling cry of a Comanche chief leading the war party, she threw the gear into drive and stomped the accelerator. The tires spun against the asphalt, belching up white plumes of acrid smoke. Drivers slammed their brakes as a blur of red metal rocketed out of the parking lot and onto the busy thoroughfare. Mona threaded through the late-night traffic, honking her horn at sluggish drivers and blowing through stoplights. She was a woman on a mission. Anyone who got between her and her intended target was going to get run down like a blind possum crossing a busy freeway. She glanced at her rearview mirror, grateful that there weren't any blue lights strobing behind her in hot pursuit. Then she perceived the anger in her eyes. For a fleeting second, even she was afraid. The three trapped men sat on the living room floor, their backs literally against the wall as they pondered their mortality.
"Have either of you thought about what your final words will be?"
asked Cole.
"Actually, I've been thinking about my dad's final words as he lay in his hospital bed,"
Andy shared. Cole softened.
"Were they, I love you?"
"No," he said.
"Hey, dumbass! You're standing on my oxygen tube!"
Then, just like that, he was gone. I didn't have the time to say goodbye or sorry for suffocating you.
"I've got regrets of my own,"
Cole said solemnly.
"There's so many things that I should have done. So many kindnesses I could have passed on to others, like giving money to a homeless shelter."
"Gee, I don't know about that," Jack said. "You ever see some of the people who stand on the street corners asking for money or food? They're some of the fattest people you'll ever see." Those slobs had better look like they were just liberated from death shall before I give them a stinking cent.
You're all heart, Jack,
Andy said, cradling his phone for solace. Cole was tired of feeling helpless.
Give me that phone.
He snatched the phone from Andy, punching in 911, and waited. And waited.
I don't think it's going through.
Let me try,
Jack said, taking the phone from Cole. After a few rings, someone answered.
Never send a boy to do a man's job,
he chortled. His joy dissipated when Lady Zeus's voice filled his ear.
Hello, Jack. Why don't you and your friends come out and play?
Jack yelped and threw the phone against the wall, smashing it.
Hey, I'm still making payments on that thing,
Andy hollered. Jack felt like a popsicle in a frozen tundra.
It was her. Lady Zeusa.
Well, what did she say?
Cole asked. Jack gulped.
She said that she wants us to...
Breath left the bodies of the terrified trio as the living room door eased open.
Should we leave?
Jack whispered.
Might be our best chance of escaping,
Cole said.
She can't get all of us at once.
The men stepped warily into the dusky hallway, expecting the undead woman to attack them in the flash of an eye. As they twisted in the grip of an unearthly silence, they waited and listened for any sound or movement. Each second felt like an eternity. Jack deferred to Cole's judgment.
Hey, Cole, do you think we ought to go back to the living room and barricade the door?
Something distracted Cole, preventing him from answering. Feeling ignored and disrespected, Jack's frustration got the better of him, making him defiant.
Darn it, Cole. The question was whether to go...
Be quiet a minute,
Cole said. Jack became furious.
Don't tell me to be...
Shh! Listen,
Cole said.
You guys hear that?
Hear what?
Yeah, I think I hear it too,
said Andy.
Sounds like a car engine. And it's getting closer.
Soon they heard the shrill sounds of a car screeching to a stop in front of the house. They heard the thunk of a car door slamming, followed by someone stomping up the front porch steps. The house rumbling knock startled the already nervous men.
Andy, if you're in there, you better answer this door. Tell your hoodlum friends that Mona Laperstein is demanding to have her boyfriend back.
A mixture of hope and trepidation was visible on the men's faces as they looked at each other and wondered which side of the door was safer. Andy went to the door.
Mona, I need your help. There's a woman in here who doesn't want me to leave.
What?
Mona yelled in fury.
You tell that stanky skank that she better let you out or I'm coming in. And when I do, there's gonna be trouble. You tell her that.
You don't understand,
Andy pleaded.
She won't let me go.
A hot river of rage surged through Mona's veins.
Don't say I didn't warn you.
Wait, you can't just let her leave,
Cole said. Andy slumped.
Oh, don't worry. She isn't going anywhere. Fact is, she's just getting started.
Outside, a revving engine roared like summer thunder.
Quick, let's get to the window in the drawing room. Take care not to fall into the hole,
Jack said. The group sidestepped the pit and went to the window that looked out onto the street. They watched in awe as Mona made a quick U-turn, then a hard ride at the intersection opposite where the house sat on a corner lot. Off in the distance, the low growl of a raging wrath barreled toward them at mock speed.
Oh my God! Mona's coming at the house! Run!
In a desperate bid for safety, the frightened men rushed into the hall and headed for the stairs. They skidded to a halt at the sight of Lady Zeusa waiting for them at the foot of the staircase.
As the devilish woman spoke, broken teeth and thick crimson poured from her mouth.
And where do you all think you're going? I think I know. You're all going to hell.
It sounded like a rocket-propelled tank was hurtling up the porch steps. A harsh glare of yellow lights illuminated the hall, bringing a look of terror to the witch's corpse-like face. Cole grabbed Andy and Jack by the back of their shirt collars and rushed them back into the drawing room, where they dove behind a sturdy couch. A cacophony of exploding wood, rumbling engine, and twisted metal tore through the air. Gasoline fumes permeated the house, choking and nauseating the cowering trio. A deafening crash cut short a terrified scream. Then all was quiet. Cole peeked over the back of the couch.
"Well, what do you see?" Jack muttered.
"I see a major gig for ServPro."
Andy sprang to his feet to see for himself. He gasped when he saw the back half of the Mini Cooper parked in the hallway.
"Oh no, Mona. Not like this,"
he wailed. He then jumped over the couch like a coke-addled kangaroo and dashed to the wreckage. Cole and Jack joined Andy beside the totaled car. Cole reached in and felt Mona's wrist for a pulse.
"She's okay, man. She just knocked herself silly, that's all,"
Andy said.
"Thank you, Cole. I'm so relieved."
"Hey, guys, I think you'd better come and look at this," Jack said, gazing under the front of the car.
Sticking out as she was, Lady Zusa resembled the Wicked Witch of the West after Dorothy's house had creamed her. Cole nudged one of her arms with his foot.
"Wow, she's flesh and blood again. Well, maybe not as much blood. Flesh doesn't look so hot either."
"Guess it's time to call the popo,"
Andy said.
"The sooner Mona recovers, the better she'll..."
Andy became glum.
"What's wrong, dude?"
"I was just thinking. When she gets better, she's gonna make my life a bigger living hell. She'll never forgive me for this. Take another picture, Cole. This may be the last time you get to see me."
"Knowing Mona as I do, you're probably right," Jack lamented.
"Maybe not,"
Cole said. He fished his phone from his pocket and dialed 911.
"What are you doing?"
Andy asked.
"Making two repairs with the same wrench,"
Cole grinned.
"911, what's your emergency?"
Cole adopted the voice of a blathering old spinster.
"Oh, hello there. I happen to be walking my little dog, Mr. Twinklesworth, when some crazy woman in a red Mini Cooper came tearing up the street. Well, let me just tell you, she drove right into a house at the corner of Pine and Chestnut. You'd better hurry. She might have killed someone. Ooh, I simply shudder thinking about it. Some people. Oh well, toodles."
Cole hung up and broke the phone in half. Jack grinned like the Cheshire Cat.
"My, you really are a high-functioning sociopath."
"You know what they say,"
Cole said with a wicked grin.
"Find something you love doing and you'll never work a day in your life."
"I can't believe you did that for me, Cole,"
Andy gushed.
"You freed me from that angry ape. Let's get out of here before the cops and paramedics show up. Hey, let's all meet at Brawley's bar and have us a little celebration."
"Since you're buying, that works for me."
"Look, I'm thankful to you for helping me out. But I don't see why I need to go broke paying your sky-high bar tab."
"Oh, you're not repaying me for my kindness. You're repaying me for my phone. With it now in two pieces, there's no way the authorities can trace the call back to me. You're welcome."
Oh, guys,
Jack blurted.
"I just got a really cool idea of something wild we can do after Brawley's. It's a little crazy, but I've always wanted to. Hey, guys, where are you going?"
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
And that was Quick, Hide the Body by P.D. Williams. A good reminder that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, and that includes creepy undead fortune tellers. A little about the author. P.D. Williams is the author of two short horror collections, Dark House Many Rooms, which is now available in paperback, and There Are Creatures Here. Other titles include the comedy horror books Beneath Her Feet and Straight Outta Claxton, books 1 through 3. His first book, Meat Shears, Reticulating Pythons, and Other Fun Baby Gift Ideas, is out of print, or so says the North Carolina Attorney General's Office. Hey, if you'd like to reach out to the author, you can find him on Facebook at P.D. Williams Horror Writer, or spinning a cardboard sign for Tony's Pawn Shop and Taxidermy at a busy intersection near the Hogweeney Mall in Bupkis, North Carolina.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next time. For all you asking about the Crimson Hour, you can expect me back in August. And for those who left new reviews, don't worry, shoutouts are on the way. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Hit that like button on your way out, would you? And until next time, everybody, go fuck yourselves. Ha ha. I love you guys. Thanks for putting up with me for 9 seasons. Here's to a fantastic season 9, y'all. Good Lord willing and the creeks don't rise.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.